Amanda Blackwood. She's a jack of all trades. She's done everything from bookkeeping, selling coupons door to door. She's built this impressive commercial real estate company, started her own consulting company, and now she's become the CEO of the Sac Metro Chamber of Commerce. She's taking her passion for helping businesses and helping them to come together and hopefully grow to their full potential. I sit down with her and get her story. She shares her entrepreneurial journey, but she also shares how she's taking the Chamber of Commerce and really turning it around. I am here with Amanda Blackwood. She's an entrepreneur. She is also the president and CEO of the Sac Metro Chamber. How you doing, Amanda?
I'm fantastic.
All right. Well, we want to get your story. We want to know about the chamber, but why don't you tell us about your background, your business background, and how you came to the chamber?
Okay. So a little bit about me. I am from Kansas, and in Kansas, if you are working, you can have your driver's license when you're 13.
Wow.
So I have been in the workforce for a long time. Over 20 years, washing dishes and doing service and all of that. So moved out here my junior year of high school, started running a pizza place.
Nice.
And then finished high school. My first real job was association management. So I worked for the Rental Housing Association and learned all about membership organizations. So policy and events and all of that. And I had the opportunity, our bookkeeper went out on maternity leave and they said, hey, Amanda, you're going to school. You're learning accounting. Do you want to learn that? Was like, sure.
Right place, right time, right. Seizing opportunity.
Right. And as any nonprofit, you know, you've got like six people to do the work of 20 people. So amazing opportunity to learn something I didn't know. So I was going to school for accounting, started learning bookkeeping, did that for a couple of years. And then as nonprofits go, we lost some funding. So had the opportunity to find something elsewhere. So I think I did the most incredible thing I've ever done work-wise, which was going door-to-door and selling coupons.
Oh, so bookkeeping and door-to-door sales. Yeah, that's quite a contrast.
Right. So I did that and kind of learned how do you build your sales team and how do you create a compelling ask and how do you do that? So did that. And then I found that I did not want to keep doing that. So it was a great experience. But I had the opportunity to go up to a company in El Dorado Hills. So I thought that I was interviewing for this controller position for this tech company in El Dorado Hills. And what I found was that the owner had three children and each of them had a small business.
Oh.
And so my job was handle that.
Wow.
So you know operations, you know HR, you can do the books, do that. So one of them had a cat veterinary business, which was interesting. One of them did restaurant franchises. So they had three restaurants. They opened all at the same time. And then one of them did commercial real estate. So that was my job. So I had done that for a while and then realized, you know, I'm doing the books and I'm cutting checks to these real estate brokers that are the same age as me that are making far more than I'm making. So can I learn how to do that? So I got my real estate license and started leasing and showing space. And then we worked with another developer partner. So we were like the money guys. They were the developer and entitlements and building projects and leasing. Worked with them for a while. And they said, hey, we really need someone to run our operations. So we had 13 different companies. And each company had its own set of investors. And we had to keep it super clean. Would you come over and run our biz ops side of that? So I did. So I left that. Came over, started working for them. We did commercial for several years, and then the market started to take a turn. Mm-hmm. So we sold off everything we had. And our principal said there were four of us girls that were all partners. And he had the philosophy when you came in, you can't get raises, but you can become a partner in the business.
Okay.
So really learning how to, you know, it's not a job. Like take mm-hmm. ownership over the future direction mm-hmm. and create a culture that you want to work in. And I mean, this was kind of pre-kids. So we're working 10, 12 hours a day building a business and all of the drama and the fun and the craziness that is that.
So very entrepreneurial. So you ran into the hard times with the recession.
Yeah.
Did that turn out to be devastating, or how did you stay agile?
So I think devastating initially, it's your stages of grief, right? So first you freak out, and then you do all those things, and then your acceptance, and you go, okay, you know, one, business, being dynamic in your business environment is essential. And to stay doing what we were doing was the riskiest thing we could do. So it was, you were forced into a, okay, there's an end to this. You know, it's 2008. Mm-hmm. This commercial market's not going to be here. So we could put our heads in the sand and keep on doing this for another 2 years, or say, hey, we have an opportunity now to take this capital and do something different. So he said, okay, I'm going to give you guys 6 months. You figure something out. So if you can find a viable opportunity for us, I will invest in that. If you can't, I'm going to retire and you guys go your separate ways. So, okay, you know, I think you get in this entrepreneurial mindset and go, well, what do I know how to do? Like, what am I highest and best at? What can I do that nobody else can do? Okay, well, we know how to do commercial development, but that's not viable. We know how to do property management, but that's really low margin, grind it out. We know how to do receiverships, which is not glamorous or fun. Mm-hmm. So what might we do knowing what we know? So one of our brokers said, hey, my father-in-law has invested in this distressed real estate fund, and they're making 30% returns, and it's, oh my God, it's so amazing. They're looking for investors. So we're like, 30% sounds a little questionable, but it's better than the 6%, you know, that I'm looking over here while carrying all of this overhead. Let's check it out. So we went in, took a look, and realized, the market was there. You know, this was kind of 2009 where you've got all of these properties and everybody's cash buyers.
Everybody, short sale. I flipped a lot of houses during that period. I know that's part of your background.
Yep. So we thought, well, okay, how does this work? And how might we add value to this operation? So it was about a $3 million fund, had a couple of steps in the process. We had about $15 million to place. So it was one of those, okay, if we gave you this, yes, the market's there, but the wheels are going to fall off this operation. This is too big, too fast, too whatever. So no, we don't want to be investors. We want to be partners. So let's come in, use what we know how to do, team up with what you know how to do best, keep everybody in their highest and best space, and see if we can really crank this out. So we did. So we put our money in there, and my job was all of the biz ops side of the house. So I'm looking at how do we use technology to be able to assess ROI on projects. As you know, being in it, you get the list at like 8 a.m., auctions at 9 a.m. This is all cash business. So you got to make quick decisions, and you have to create an environment that everybody's enabled to act really quickly and dynamically. And if you pull the trigger.
How important was access to capital? This was a period of time where most people did not have access to capital, right?
Right.
It was banks had tightened up.
Yep.
And you guys somehow had that fund together still. Right. The fund was already set up, or is that your own money?
Right. So they had a fund that already existed. We had our $15 million, so we were able to put it in right away. But, you know, knowing this is a short window of time, and even though we had placed all of our capital, there was still more inventory available that was at, say, 15-16% margin. And for us, I got to flip it 2 times. Mm-hmm. So one to cover the expense and the other to make the profit. So one of my jobs was, okay, if I got a short window, how do I get the most capital in here as possible in this window of time? So we did 2 things. One, created private placement. And went through all of that, which was interesting.
Wow.
A lot of folks can't put retirement into real estate. So created a mechanism and vehicle to do that. And we're able to offer a really consistent return. And how do I use institutional financing? Because we've got this little window. Banks want to engage. It's not a normal instrument that they know how to do. So how might we create a creative revolving line of credit that I am collateralizing with these deeds so that we can get a couple million into this operation to keep, you know, getting return.
Well, thinking about that, that's obviously financially, you have to be financially savvy. You've got, obviously you were involved in operations. And now take us fast forward. How did you end up at the chamber?
Right. So I leave that. We rode that out, saw that the margin was changing, and I gotten an executive coach during all that time, which is one of the best things you can do.
Okay.
So, and I would just call, you know, your professional therapy that, what do you want to do? Where do you want to be? What would that world look like? And my coach had told me, hey, Amanda, I see that you've done real estate. I see you've done these restaurant franchises. I see you have done a whole bunch of other little businesses. I had opened and started a whole bunch of small businesses on my own. So it doesn't seem like it's the industry that is what motivates you. It's being in that space to take something, to see future potential, and to be able to elevate that path. So what if you just did that? What if that was your world? And, oh, no, I can't do that because I'm building real estate. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. And she's like, okay. Just go through that exercise. Map out what it would look like if you really created your own company and all you did was take organizations from A to B. What might that feel like? So I did that exercise. So kind of flash forward, we sold off all of our real estate, started wrapping up the fund. We're thinking about what are we going to do? Margins are getting tight. And in my drawer, I had that folder of what if I couldn't fail? You know, what if I tried this? I thought, you know what? I've got a 3-week-old baby. Like, I'm home. So I had a 2-year-old and a 3-week-old baby. I'm home. We wrapped up this amazing journey in real estate. What if I just tried that? So I did. So I launched my company, which was Tandem Consulting, found one of my largest clients, which was King's Casino Management Corporation that builds Stone's Gambling Hall in Citrus Heights. And one of their principals had always sat on the board for the Chamber of Commerce. So he said, hey, I think this is something that you should do. So I did. And when I got into the chamber, there were a couple things that really stood out for me. Number one, they had a program, Leadership Citrus Heights. And as I got to know the city leadership and government of the city of Citrus Heights, I found almost every person in elected office or position of leadership had gone through that program. So I realized what it was that it, for a chamber to be able to create that environment that helps people understand how your city works, get you civically engaged, and then encourages people into leadership positions. So that really spoke to me, and I wanted to do that, so I chaired that. And then I saw a Chamber of Commerce is this place that gets to sit in the middle of what's happening with government, what's happening with your business community, what's happening with nonprofit, what's happening with your community leaders, and you get to hear all of these conversations and sit in the middle and make those connections. That those groups don't normally talk to each other, but they all talk to us. So how might we elevate our space in the middle to create connections that are going to move progress forward and not have siloed conversations? So I did that with the Citrus Heights Chamber. And I found during that time, I participated in the Nehemiah Emerging Leaders Program. Mm-hmm. And in that program, they get you very civically involved. So you started finding out, you know, I live in Sacramento. I want Sacramento to be successful. I have 2 kids. You know, this is where we're going to live. My husband's a teacher, so we're very entrenched in the community. What are the organizations that operate in that space regionally? Who's making those connections regionally? So I did some volunteer work at Greater Sacramento Economic Council, started the Young Professionals Network, did some work with Valley Vision and started hearing what they were doing, did some work with SETA and the Workforce Pipeline, and then found, hey, the Sac Metro Chamber is that place that regionally sits in the middle that's making all of these connections. That's a place I think I could add a lot of value. But it wasn't an open job. I just kind of put to the universe, I want to be in this space. So I'm going to keep volunteering in this space until the opportunity makes itself known.
So you sort of created your opportunity, but you're just getting in the game in a way.
Yeah, I think, and you manifest that. I'm a very big believer in that we have a purpose, and you know when you're in line with it, and you know when you're not. Mm-hmm. So if you don't know where the end is, just put yourself in the game.
Yeah.
And you're going to start exposing yourself to people that you need to know. And the path is going to illuminate itself if you just put yourself in the right space.
Okay, well, so now you're the president and CEO of the Sac Metro Chamber. Talk to us about where it's at today. Where do you see taking the Sac Metro?
So, beautiful story about Sac Metro Chamber is we're almost 125 years old. And it's an incredible history. And through that, the chamber's been a lot of different things to a lot of people over that time. So we've helped retain jobs. We've done business attraction. We've helped local businesses grow, been active politically. So what I saw with the chamber is our business community is dynamic and evolving, and it's changing. And there are so many things that the chamber does that are fantastic. But some of the areas where we're not being as affected as I would like to see is really creating that space for our entrepreneurial and startup community to engage, really creating a space for our women-owned businesses to engage, or our opportunities for women of color. So the chamber has an amazing history, and it's precious and incredible, and we will retain it, and we're able to enhance it to reach audiences that maybe we haven't been able to do before.
As entrepreneurs, we know that, and you've done this. You've turned on a dime when the economy changes. You can make decisions and stay very agile. Now, I'm thinking of a nonprofit such as the Chamber of Commerce, who has a board of directors and tradition, I guess, right. This 125 year tradition to go in and make massive changes to. Create to seize the opportunities that Sacramento has right now. I mean, how do you go in and change a ship that's been going how it's been going for so long?
Right. Well, that's a fantastic question. So I think for us, it all comes down to our why. Why are we here? Why are we here? And I think I speak from my own experience and definitely where the board comes from, that running and operating a business in California is challenging. And when you are running a small business, it is extremely challenging in that you're all the things, right? Your whatever it is that you do, and your HR and your marketing and your compliance and your legal and your advocacy and your, there is no way for you to know all of the things that exist out in the world that are making it more difficult for you to be successful. So for us, our big why at the end of the day, if we don't do anything else, we are here to create an environment for you to succeed, because you are out there grinding it out and you need somebody that has your back. So if we keep focused on our North Star, that that's what it is, then it gives us that framework to say, are we winning? Are we being effective in that space? Is our advocacy aligning to that? Or our events aligning to that? Or our networking opportunities aligning to that? So I think we have a shared understanding of what we're here to do.
Okay.
And if that's it, it gives us a framework to have real conversations about, are we doing that in the best way?
Mm-hmm. How important is member growth? I know in a traditional entrepreneurial business, you want top line growth. You also would, in a good situation, you want to have bottom line growth at the same time, right? So how does that look at the Sac Metro Chamber?
Right. Well, so for us, we are 6 counties, 22 cities, right? And our constituency is really broad. So I've got, you know, what a farmer in Yuba City is dealing with is not what a coffee shop in downtown is dealing with, is not what a manufacturer down on Power Inn is dealing with. So our people have very, very broad and distinct needs. Where the strength comes from a membership organization is when I represent 1,400, 1,500 members, when I represent 700 young professionals in the region, when we represent over 200,000 employees, our policymakers have to listen.
Okay.
So, you know, it's one of those pieces of leverage to go, I'm not just raising my hand that I'm a small business and I'm struggling. I'm saying, hey, you got 1,000 employers in the region who are struggling. And I know that you have some great intention behind the decisions you're making. And let us help educate you as to what our challenges are, because this is your workforce. This is your economy.
Well, what does a win look like for you? You're obviously advocating for policy. I was expecting there to be, goals around membership growth or, having the companies within your constituency to have them be thriving. Right. So how do you measure that kind of thing?
Right. So we look at a lot of different things. We've got KPIs all over the place. And I come from finance, so everything is measurable. And if it's not measurable, we need to find a way to measure it. So for us, we kind of look at externally, you know, what's a win? A win in the policy space is having someone truly understand the impact of their choices and being able to create regulation is needed, right? Infrastructure is needed. All of that is needed. And it all costs money, and we understand that. But you've got to understand where the business person is coming from so that you're helping and not hurting. When we look internally, what does that look like? Is creating moments of engagement for our members that you wouldn't be able to get anywhere else. So there are a lot of ways to network, right? You can LinkedIn, you can meet up, you can whatever. But what the chamber does is we create opportunities for collision and connection that would not happen in any other space.
Okay. So I imagine there is opportunity to partner with other communities, right? The Chamber of Commerce is a community that's been around for 125 years, but there's other emerging business communities. You mentioned GSAC. Are there other alliances that come in handy in building this thing?
Yes. So we actively look toward that for two reasons. One, I'm a firm believer in the power of collective impact. And the reality of our region is we have finite resources. So we want to do all the things, and all the things sound amazing, and all the things would help somebody, but we can't do all the things. So if we're going to choose, how do we align with what other organizations are already doing or are focused on so that we can collectively try to move the ball forward? At the same time, for the chamber, what's important for us is we know where we are highest and best. We are for business. So that is the lens that I bring. If there's an area that is not my competency, that's not my space. Mm-hmm. Like, that's okay. Yeah. That's okay. That's okay to create space for other people to excel. We want to be at our highest and best all the time. I'm a big good to great person, right? So what is my hedgehog? And that's all I'm going to do.
Uh-huh. So you stay focused. Well, thinking about, the future of Sacramento, what it looks like today, we're kind of known, I guess, as a sleepy government town. If you were to pull out your crystal ball, what do you imagine for the city and the region?
So what we need to see is far more inclusion in the way that we are going about building our economy. So you can take it from an ethical standpoint. You can take it from a data standpoint. So for this, conversation, I'll take it from the data standpoint and say this very last Brookings research that we saw. Right, Brookings came in. They kind of did a stress test of our region and said, hey, compared to other sister regions, you were coming out of the recession slower than almost everyone else. And that's not okay. And knowing that that could be on the horizon again, how do we create an environment that helps us be resilient? And when you start digging into the data, what we're seeing is that there are parts of our community that don't have the opportunity to engage in the economy. So it could be because we just don't have workforce programs in place. It could be we're just missing mid-level tech skills. It could be the communication between what business needs are and what's happening in the classroom is broken or not as effective as it could be. It could be that we unintentionally have policies in place that are creating barriers that we don't know. Hey, women-owned businesses aren't being able to compete because of X. Or we've got communities of color that aren't being able to compete because of whatever. So we've got to, as a region, say, it is a rising tides way of thinking that if we can create opportunity for those that are entrepreneurial, for those that want to engage, to be able to engage, then that's going to unlock our potential. And if we don't do that, we will truly pay the price and we will not be a resilient region and we won't be able to bounce back. And I don't know about any of you, but I don't want to go through another recession like we did. I don't want to be living in fear in that way. I don't want people to be losing their homes. So we've got to create high-wage jobs. We have to create opportunity that makes business successful. It creates a vibrant community. It enables us to connect and be mutually supportive of each other. And that's the kind of community I think we all want to live in.
Without a doubt. Well, let's talk just a little bit more with you about on the personal side, because that's, I mean, very well said, Amanda. And I'm just thinking to myself, how do you be all that? And yet you have two small children.
Right.
You've got this whole other set of responsibilities.
Right. Well, you tell me when you figure that out. You know, I think I'm of the mindset of this. And actually, Rachel Zillner at Safe Credit Union, she gave me this really, really good advice because she's a mom, entrepreneur, has two young kids, has a big job. And she said, just be present in the moment that you're in when you're in it. So I think that was a really good life lesson for me, that when I'm at work, I'm 110%. And when I'm with my girls, I'm 110%. Yeah. You know, when it's my time to be with my husband, it's 110%. So, you know, nobody has things in balance. That's a fallacy. Like, there is no work-life balance in everyone's habit. If you compare yourself to others and, oh, well, they seem like they have it all together. Nobody has it all together, right? We're just human beings, and we're just in this collective experience together. But you can choose in the moment that you're in, be completely committed and be completely present. And, you know, I saw a quote recently that was, be happy for this moment because this moment is your life. You're not waiting. You know, there's no my work life and my home life and I'm going to do this because I'm waiting for this. It is your life. You're in it right now. So commit, be in it, be engaged, and try to leave it better than you found it.
Commit to the moment. I love it, Amanda. I want to thank you for what you do for our city, bringing us together, bringing the business community together, and finding a way to share your wisdom. I think we can all take away from what you said today to help focus on the priorities in our life. And it's starting with the moment we're in. Thank you very much for coming on.
Of course. Thank you so much.
If you like our entrepreneurial stories, if you like the messages that we bring that inspire, if you want a little more Mark Haney, not everybody does, but if you do, feel free to subscribe, feel free to be part of our community, engage, comment, share. I want to get to know you better. You want to get to know me better. Follow me on all our social media platforms at The Mark Haney. I look forward to knowing you better, and let's get to know each other better so we can help build these businesses that we love.